This podcast is brought to you by Shout Engine. In less than 5 minutes, you can start your own podcast for free with ShoutEngine.com.
Now we're rolling.
Are we?
Yeah.
We really rolling?
We rolling.
Can you picture me rolling? My 500 Benz? That was my favorite Tupac song.
Picture me rolling?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it because you love the Benz so much? Because it had a car in it.
Because I always played it in the car. And I was dreaming about picturing myself rolling.
And you were in a villager.
When I was in a van.
I used to listen to like Rex and Effect when I was in my dad's Scout. The culture clash.
We were so white.
Yeah, I was never the hip-hop kid.
Is that a technical term? The hip-hop kid?
Yes.
My friend introduced me to Tupac, who moved to where we are from California, actually. And he was like all about the West Side rap. And I didn't really know about the West Side rap when I was 12.
I think my thing is, even at that age, I'm like, I can't be the white kid from New England, like, trying to roll around with fucking like Biggie on or fucking
especially in Boston, you'll get pulled over for that.
Yeah, just for listening, that's true.
Yeah. But I don't know why we started on Tupac, but because you're picturing me rolling, that's why.
That's what we do.
What was I rolling? Oh my, I rolled in so many whips this week. Jesus,
did you?
I reviewed like 25 cars in the last 10 days.
And you went to EXR, too.
I went to Cobb, and I went to EXR.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
Cobb Tuning in Texas. Went to Harris Hill Racetrack.
Where the fuck is that?
We've been there.
It's in Austin. We went there to film those Miatas, and it was cold and raining the last time we were there. But we had fun. It's like one of those places where you kind of go, and then there's no rules. Why do you have one black fingernail, Zach?
From I was the Jesus last night.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, you recycled.
My other costume didn't show up in the mail, so I had to recycle.
Dun-dun-dun. It just really threw me off, because, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Zach with the one black fingernail. I was like, huh, okay.
It makes more sense than Zach with the one long pinky nail.
Well, that's what he has, I think, in the movie.
Does he have the long pinky? I think it's long.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not going to get a press-on nail and be like, I'm committing to this.
You could have if you fucking committed to your costume.
I know. I'm such a loser.
I think did Nino win like a best costume?
He won best non-theme costume contest.
Non-theme?
Well, the theme was like music.
Oh yeah. Nino was Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah. Where'd you guys go?
Some party downtown. It was in a warehouse thing. It was kind of medium, but everybody loved his costume. And just hearing him talk, like, we're in traffic and in Venice, and he stopped at a light, and he just, like, rolls down the window, and the car next to us is in costume, and he's just like, the Macho Man approves of the devil, because she was dressed as the devil, and they just look, and they start laughing. He's like, now go to a 7-Eleven and pick up a Slim Jim.
Yeah, that's about par for
Nino.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, yeah.
There is very few things in the world than rolling around with Nino when he's shit-faced in your car.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
It's very amusing when he's drunk. I'll never forget when we came back from the Xbox One launch party, and he was just...
It's funny that you'll never forget that, because I've forgotten that.
And Nino, you guys weren't there.
And Nino never remember it.
That's a good reason.
Nino will never remember
it.
But I remember we get down to like Culver City, and there's like not that many Wendy's in California. And he goes, fucking Wendy's! We gotta do Wendy's! And I'm like, okay. So we get over to Wendy's, and as it is on like a Friday night there, it's kind of a shit show in Culver. And he's like leaning out the fucking window, yelling at people. Is there a guy slinging fucking dope in the alley right next to it? And I'm like, this is not a great place to be fucking around too bad, because those guys are not fucking around in the corner there.
Wait, it's a bad place to be fucking around because they're fucking around?
No.
They're not fucking around.
They're not fucking around.
You can't fuck around because they're not fucking around.
It's not. That little area right there, that little part of Culver there is not too friendly.
What hood part of Culver is that?
Right where the Wendy's is at the very...
I don't know where Wendy's is.
You know what? It's right at the very end of where downtown Culver is, where it starts turning into fucking the hood there.
Like our side or the far side?
No, the
I'm not sure because we're kind of we're not like hood here.
No, no,
we're
no.
Like not,
no,
not
the hood. Other one
it's
up towards
the other side
by Rodeo.
Oh, the other,
not
oh,
Rodeo.
Yeah, yeah. At Rodeo.
Rodeo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. That. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's slightly.
Yeah. You
slightly
go. Those, it's yeah. funny. You can be sitting in the line there.
But
and you
Nino.
Watch,
Nino yeah. isn't. Least the difference between Nino and Tom. Is Nino does it in a way that's like non-threatening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, everybody laughs at him.
Yeah. Tom, you go, oh, dude, stop. But Nino, you can all laugh. You can laugh. You
yeah.
know?
Harris Hill was, yeah, we did the Miatas, and it was like a tiny, hilly little racetrack in Texas.
It's like a little private kind of thing.
I was going to be like, there's another racetrack in Austin?
Yeah, yeah.
It's small.
It's small, and it's like 1 point, no, it's like 2 miles, I think, maybe. Maybe like 1.8 miles. I don't know, but it's fucking bumpy, man. I forgot. I guess, I don't know if it was because I was going slower in the Miatas because it was cold and wet and I didn't really think about it, or I don't know if time has passed and I've forgotten, or maybe it's gotten worse.
Well, cold and wet didn't do any help on suspension and tires, though, either.
He's going slower.
I was going slower in the Miata, but like, I was going fast and it's really bumpy.
It has different. Surfaces, right? Doesn't it have some tarmac?
Yeah, it's what I would call a mixed surface track. It's in the way that the FDR is a mixed surface highway.
Yeah, so luckily, you have that training from the firm.
Yeah, I know. But I love the people there. It's nice, and it's actually it's pretty fun, but it's brutal on your suspensions and your back. So I drove the EcoBoost Mustang, the Stage 3, basically the same stuff we have in the Fiesta, applied to a Mustang.
How's that?
Cool. It's cool.
That could be good.
It's not crazy, crazy fast.
So, okay, so that's the 2.3.
2.3 turbo, obviously rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Stock turbo.
Right.
It's got an intake, an exhaust, an intercooler, and tune.
So that's actually probably a lot closer to Jake and Jason's Focus that you drove the other day.
That I drove the other day? Well, yeah.
How much power does it make? Because when we had that press car, I was like, "This, if I could get that engine with a manual, I think I'd be pretty
This one
stuck.
Had a manual as well, and it was 300 horsepower at the wheels and 400 pounds of torque at the wheels.
That sounds perfect.
Which is pretty good. So I drove that thing on the track first, and I was like, okay, this is pretty good. It was pretty good. It made cool sounds, you know, and it like was light-ish feeling.
How's the power band broadness?
It sort of dies at the top. You short shift. Yeah, you short shift at like 5,500 most of the time.
It's a boost. How's the lag now?
It's similar. It's like similar to the Fiesta's power band, actually, where it's really strong around like 3-4. It's like it got a really good shove, and it sort of dies around 55. Okay. But it's a small turbo, you know.
So, all right. What's the price difference between the EcoBoost and the GT again? It's like $5,000?
I think it's like $5,000 or $6,000. I think the EcoBoost starts at like 24 and the GT starts at 30 or something like that.
Okay. So then you're probably putting what? 3,000?
On the track, I'm almost certain the GT's faster still.
Right. But what I'm getting to is so you do that, so you get 24 and then the cop stuff's probably what? $3,000?
I think it's like $3,000 or $3,500 to go from stock to the Stage 3.
And
I think
sure
the exhaust
is
like $1,200. The intercooler is like $600 or $700.
I get it that that's interesting if you bought the EcoBoost, but if you're gonna, that's getting real close to the GT in price.
It is, but in the insurance could be a big difference for a lot of people. The EcoBoost is a lot cheaper to insure. I got 30.5 miles per gallon on my 30-mile highway drive back from the track.
That's awesome.
That's pretty fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, not I mean, you know, not I don't I don't know. It's here's the one thing, and it's not really Cobb's fault. The car I drove was going to SEMA. After
so
I was done
was
with
SEMA'd
it.
Out.
It wasn't fully SEMA'd out, but it had SEMA wheels on it. It had these ADV1 wheels, which are not bad wheels. They
so it
looked
20-inch wheels with rubber bands.
This car came with 255s square stance on, I believe, 18-inch wheels. Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's not bad.
I think it's 18s. And, 255 square. This car had 285 20s in the front and 305 20s in the back.
That's way too much tire for that car.
And so by going from square to staggered, and from, you know, that 255 in the back to a 305, the car was undriftable.
Yeah, that's way too much tire for that car.
I was able to go out on very cold tire. Like, I let the car sit for like a half hour, and I went out and I got one slide. Like, literally, out of the pits, one slide. No heat in the tires. And then I tried dozens of times after that, and it would not drift.
Was it? Did it handle well, though, with all that shit?
Or
was
it in balance? It handled well. I wouldn't put a 305 in the back. It definitely understeered. And then the next day, I drove it on the road. They had a really nice, really nice back road with nobody on it. Mm-hmm. The great, I did a road one take as well, and I had them put the stock wheels and tires on it for that. They didn't have time to change them at the track because the other wheels mm-hmm. weren't there. They were at the shop. So it was much better on the stock wheels. Mm-hmm. So if you have one of those, I think the answer is to run a stock size wheel and just get a lighter wheel. Maybe go to a 19, but I would still run a 255 or a 265 square.
Yeah, you might even be able to do a 275.
To their credit, I would do it square. For a car that makes 300 wheel, that's not enough power to fucking drift. And I tried clutch kicking it like twice. I was like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. And it still wouldn't. So you can't, the car looked fucking cool. It looked tough with those wheels on it, and they fit, and they didn't rub, or there was no problems with it. And I didn't even, at first when I drove the car, I was like, God, this thing, maybe it really doesn't have enough power to drift. And I'm like, that's stupid. Of course it has enough power to drift. And I got out of the car and looked at the tires, like, oh, okay, this now makes a lot of sense.
Well, and the dangerous thing would be is with tires that big is that if you let off the power band any bit, you could hook mid-corner and just fucking launch yourself the wrong way. I mean, somebody that's running around with that much tire,
the car will understeer. It will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that you're taking away the balance of the equal grip all around that it's designed for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you could go to a 265 or 275, 18 or 19 and probably be fine. But if you want to drift it, I would not. In fact, I might even consider intentionally putting worse tires on it if you want to drift
it. Did it have a suspension?
It had Cobb's springs and sway bars and stock performance pack dampers.
Oh, good.
It was all right.
The dampening was great in that car.
Stock. Yeah, it was. It was pretty good. I mean, Harris Hill, like I said, is fucking bumpy, and so it's really actually the tarmac is great in the corners and the straightaways are all really bumpy. So the car is actually pretty well settled. If you're trying to drive clean, if you're not trying to drift, the car is very settled and planted in the corners and predictable, and you're not going to get in trouble with it. It's not going to get away from you. But in the straightaways, it did hop around a bit, but it's just because full throttle over bumpy tarmac, like that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I drove it on the road, and it was like the Fiesta. On the road, it's great. I mean, it's great. When you're on a track, especially in a relatively low-powered car, 300 horsepower for 3,700 and change pounds is relatively low power. At a racetrack, you're full throttle all the time. It's your full brake or your full throttle, and that's it. And so, you know, it's not like, oh my God, it's fast. But on the road, when you're in and out of boost more, you're mid-throttle, you're full throttle, you're off the throttle, you coast, you brake, you know, on the road, like the Fiesta, when you get in the throttle every time and you get the surge of torque, it feels quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And the corners are much tighter on a road, so you feel the nimbleness a little more, whereas on a racetrack, you know, when you're only turning the wheel at most 90 degrees, you know, the heaviness of the V8 up front isn't quite as apparent as it, you know what I mean? In a tight corner, you really notice it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, no, it was good. It was cool. As a road car, fucking awesome. If you want like a fun, quick, engaging car that seats four and gets good fuel economy, like, this is totally a good idea. Yeah, if your mind goes, I need a V8, then you're not going to be talked out of it. But yeah,
the difference is $3,000 on MSRP.
For a V8?
Yeah.
Shit. Well, you might get it back in fuel economy. You might get it back in insurance savings. You might get it back in availability.
Mm-hmm.
You could get options on the, you know, if you could easily get $3,000 worth of options on a EcoBoost car.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was... Basically, exactly what I expected, pretty much. It's sort of like the Fiesta, where it's quick on a back road, and it's nice on a track. It would be a good beginner's track car, for sure, because it won't get away from you. Then I get out of that and I get in there, stage two, 997 turbo, which which has an intake, intercoolers, exhaust, and a tune.
Still all wheel drive?
Yes.
Okay.
No ceramic brakes, steel brakes, and PDK gearbox. And it turned Harris Hill into an autocross. I mean, it was, the car was so fast that you couldn't go full throttle anywhere on track for more than about 1 second.
Jeez.
Like, the internet makes you feel like 650 horsepower isn't much, but on a smallish racetrack, it's a lot. And the
especially
car was
when
fucking
you're guaranteed
fast.
To hook really the entire
fast.
Way.
Too. I mean, it's really fast.
It's, people don't, if you drive a lot of really high horsepower cars, that's fine. But, like, I consider myself kind of a medium experience person. So when we go to the MVG track days,
yeah,
like I was comfortable with the 450 horsepower Camaro 1LE.
Yeah.
But then when it's like time for the Viper and they have an instructor,
yeah,
I'm like, good.
Yeah.
600 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's like, yeah, it's the Viper. But it's like, if you haven't really driven full throttle as fast as you can with that much power, it's a lot.
There's a difference, and there's quickly. A difference on a road in a car like that. You don't use full throttle ever.
Mm-mm.
I mean, ever. There's, you know,
and if you are, you've got 2 miles ahead of
even,
you.
Even in my Corvette, which is only 400 wheel, I go full throttle like on a highway entrance ramp. That's basically it. I mean, there's on a canyon, I'm almost never full throttle. Whatever.
No.
In this Porsche, you would not be full throttle. Period. Anywhere except like with a big long fucking, what was that?
Power surge? Power dropped out. Yeah.
Fortunately, we have that battery backup.
Yes, we do. I'm glad that we bought that.
So you know this thing on you know every time you get into a Porsche, you go, well, every car needs to be this,
yeah.
You know, and then you go, how much is this upgrade? And it's a little more than for the Mustang. And ultimately, it's the same three parts applied to a Porsche instead of a Mustang. I think it costs twice as much.
Porsche tax.
And I asked Ian at Cobb, who was very, very forward about this stuff like this, and I go, what is up with the Porsche tax? And I go, why does a tune, you know, at Cobb, they make those access ports. They physically build them in their place, which is cool. I didn't know that, you know? And they got the whole tour of the place. It was very much like APR in Alabama, where it's really kind of like, or HRE, maybe. Nah, not even, HRE kind of only makes one thing. These guys make a lot of stuff.
Yeah, HRE is just a giant machine shop.
That's true. There was a lot of development and coding and prototyping and 3D printing and like all this kind of shit going on. And I asked about the Porsche tax, and he said, dude, we gotta buy a $150,000 car. He's like, if there's a Subaru, we buy a $40,000 car, an STI, and we do it on that. He's like, we got to go buy a brand new Porsche every time it comes out.
Their development costs are higher.
The development costs are higher. That's it.
Well,
and he said in some cases the parts are physically more expensive. You know, I don't know.
Well, they're intercoolers. There's two of them.
That's true.
However, I find it funny is when they jack up the price. When Porsche exhausts, they're all super expensive. And there's like 2 feet of exhaust.
Yeah, it's like a girl buying, you know, a bikini. The smaller the bikini, the more fucking expensive it is. When Hannah told me the cost of like a nice bikini from a designer, I was horrified.
How much are they?
Like $300. I swear to God.
Oh, board
you
shorts
want,
for
you
life.
Know, you want like a fucking Dolce & Gabbana bikini? Like it's a fucking bikini and it's $300. I was like, I was horrified. I mean, Hannah doesn't shop like that, but
no. I'm so glad to be.
You're
here.
Like yeah. That's like,
but it's the
two
same.
Wash
it's the same concept.
Material.
An exhaust for like a Ferrari 430 is like one muffler with four tips that come out of the side of it, and it's like $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Or my favorite is like the Hefner turbo kits. Like there is no easier car to slap turbos on than a Gallardo or an R8 because the exhaust manifolds
are right there. Yeah, yeah.
You bolt turbos and then pipes and you're done.
But someone's got to buy a car.
But
to
it's
develop.
$20,000.
Yeah.
You know.
And also with a car like that, you know, Hefner especially because he's an installer takes a risk. You know, he takes in a $200,000 car. Fucking something scratches it. You know, he's got to pay whatever mm-hmm. to fix it. Same thing with, you know, Larry, with Larry and his detailing. A lot of the detailing comes from risk assumed from using power tools on million-dollar cars. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
And Larry has super high insurance for that kind of stuff.
He does, I think. And I imagine, you know, whatever they need to do at Cobb, they're doing. It's fucking professional down there. Mm-hmm. But yeah. they have, like, a studio where they photograph the parts. It was
well,
cool.
I mean, and there's a little bit of what the market will bear.
Yeah.
They're going to sell 300,000 Fiesta tuners
yeah.
over the course of 10 years.
Yeah.
They're going to sell 3,000 Porsche tuners.
That's true, yeah. And I asked them about, you know, all the Ferraris have turbos now, you know what I mean? You're going to make a kit for a 488 or something? And he goes, you know, if 5% of Porsche tuners, of Porsche owners, or come to us for a tune, you know, that's whatever, you know, 2,000 people or whatever, right? He goes, if 5% of Ferrari's owners come to us, it's going to be 100 people. You know,
yeah,
so
true.
He said the market is very small,
like,
for stuff.
How
like
often
that.
Do you see a Navitec Ferrari? Like, they're like the yeah. only people that have been turboing forever.
Yeah.
I've never seen one in person.
I've seen two. You've seen one in person. Yeah. Remember at Rentec, Hartmut had one on the dyno.
Oh,
remember?
It did.
They had
the
light blue one on the dyno.
That's true.
And it made like 660 wheel or some insane-o
awesome.
Number.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
But the thing, actually, you know, the funny thing is that now that they are turbo, the threshold for getting into doing
true.
It is going to be much lower.
Very good.
Because
point.
It's going to be, if you've got one guy.
Yeah, you don't have to design the hardware. The hardware's there. You just need a fucking ECU tune.
True. You're going to have to just get a good tuner. And to be honest, a tuner is a tuner is a tuner.
If you're
a really good tuner like Randy over at Mountune that
yeah.
used to be Cobb's guy, like you give him 4 months
yeah.
on a system and he could do it on a Ferrari the same way he could on a Ford.
Yeah, you could always pro tune something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it would be expensive and it would take a little while, but it's doable.
Biggest thing is dealing with encryption on the ECU.
Yeah. I think there is a lot that goes into decrypting and then re-encrypting and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where we start dipping into my profession.
Well, that's the problem with Chrysler is Musto complains all the time is they
crack
encrypt
heavy,
the hell
right?
out of their ECU and they
yeah.
don't support their aftermarket enough.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what Mopar basically has killed the entire aftermarket for all their LX cars.
It's terrible.
So anyway, the 650 horsepower, I mean, I think the kit is like $5,000 or $6,000, you know, for the 911 versus $3,500 for the Mustang for the
actually,
same
for the 911. That's reasonable.
Don't hold me to that price, but when he told me it, I was shocked at how low it was.
Yeah,
I was like, what? It's like, you know, 5% of the purchase price of the car gets you an extra 100 wheel.
Yeah, you should do that, everybody.
Yeah,
which is funny because that's really reasonable because you see a similar markup for Corvette stuff. Like, it's not
yeah.
that much cheaper, and there's a fuck ton more Corvettes on the
yeah.
road than there are Porsches.
Yeah. And I don't see any reason that if you have a 997 turbo, you wouldn't get this. I see no reason at all. I don't see a downside to it in any fucking
way. As soon
way.
As your warranty's gone, fuck it.
Yeah. And
it's good to
the
have.
Car, yeah, it made 540 at the wheels and 485 torque at the wheels, which in a 911 is really fucking fast, especially on a track when you're full throttle a lot. And but the brakes held up and it cornered really nice and you can get oversteer but on those straightaways it was brutal. It was fuck. At first I went out and did one session and I left PSM in sport, and that uses brake vectoring. So I'd go on these bumps and it would drag the back a little back and forth, and he was like, no, you got to go full off, and I went full off and it was better, but it was rough. I mean, you'll see it. Like, my head fucking slams on the ceiling, and boom, boom, and like, shit. And it's right. It's on that. The worst one is on that straightaway before you go up the steep hill.
Right.
So there's a short straightaway that in the EcoBoost, I think I hit around 90, 95. In the Porsche, I was 115. And it's super bumpy, and then up a blind hill that you have to brake right before the crest of the hill.
And there's a right.
And it's a right, at 180
yeah.
degree
track where
right.
Is shot with the car that had the Lexus motor? Spot?
Yeah, the Mazda, the Miata with the Lexus okay. motor, as well as CJ Wilson's like race car. And it's in the Porsche, it was hairy. It was because it just gets banked, bounced around all over the place, and then it's got a settle brake, and then, you know.
You know what just dawned on me, though, is that with them putting the work into the Porsche stuff now, they're going to be so good over the next 5 years, because now that every Porsche is going to be turbo from the Cayman all the way from the Boxster in the Cayman all the way up through whatever the fuck they're going to call the Turbo S now.
Yeah,
is Cobb publicly traded?
I have no idea.
they're gonna sell a lot.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
And they've been working with BBI too. I think they tuned Zwart's car, I believe.
Oh, yeah, they've been working with them for a while.
Yeah, but Tim said when we were down there that they were doing a lot of stuff together.
Yeah, I'm doing a show with Tim next week.
Cool.
Super fast note, I just looked up, Edmund has a long-term Mustang GT.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got one with a 373 rear end, so obviously shorter. But their best MPG was 23 and a half.
Yeah.
And I believe you can thank Carlos for that.
I mean, no, well, that's...
No, that's their highway. That's their best...
No, so. I mean the 373 rear.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I think Musso got that for his car, too.
No, you should at least get the 355, if not the 373 for...
Oh, yeah.
For Edmonds, if you don't have to buy your own gas, get the 373 for sure.
It's good on the track. Musta loves his, but that's the best. So,
now that they got the 6-speed in that car, that's a big difference, too, is that it's not as bad as it used to be.
Well, they've had the 6-speed for a while, but...
I don't know. I think daily now. EcoBoost Mustang with a tune would be the shit. I think
it would be. Yeah, no, it would be a really fun daily.
America's 240 SX.
But you realize when you think about the 300 horsepower, 400 pounds of torque, like that, those are great numbers. But you kind of realize that the Mustang is still kind of a big car.
Yeah, it is.
And like that's here's where I think. The Mustang, the Ford people know this for sure. Because if you open the hood of this fucking thing, right where the turbo is a space that will hold a turbo about five times the size of the current turbo. Like, there's just an open space with nothing there. And, like, you the dumbest, worst fucking fabricator on earth could put a giant turbo in one of those things.
I'm going to guess that there's probably going to be 100 of them.
They will, and they'll get there, and I'm sure it'll be cool. And, like, there's apparently a guy who ran a stock car on a stock EcoBoost with Cobb Stage 1 tune and an E40 blend and ran in the 11s. Like in one of these things, you can make these fuckers pretty fast. I think you might need a big turbo. You might need to go E85 or E40 or whatever. But like you can make these things fast.
It's like a business meeting, and they like pass the mail, you know, to the guy they're meeting with, and he opens it, and there's just like a stack of money.
Yeah,
and like what's that? And like, no, we just left that there.
Yeah,
that's just whatever you want to do with it. That's where it is.
And Cobb's doing flex fuel as well, so you can just put whatever amount of E85 in the tank you want, and it'll be fine.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Mountain guys, because they're going to be competing real hard against each other with those EcoBoost Mustangs.
I mean, yes and no. Mountain is inherently restricted by, at least for their volume product, by what Ford will allow them to get away with and still be covered under their warranty. Also, it wouldn't be bad for Mountain, because guess where they buy their access ports from? So, you know, one way or the other... You know, I think it'll be fine. And they actually said I talked to them about Mountain a bunch, and they said that, you know, because Ford covers them, they have to be, you know, here, and they'll sell you an out of warranty package that looks remarkably similar to our Stage 3 package, you know, and then you can get whatever you want. But they do a good job. And
I will argue there's some big differences between Cobb's high end packages and the Mountain ones, because we've got them back to back. Thad's car and my car, on the Fiestas. There are definite characteristic differences and big differences in parts.
So, all right.
But they both do good stuff. I'm just saying it's very. They're right up against each other, so it's going to be interesting watching them fight over the same market.
Or are you saying that some of Mountain stuff is the Kirkland brand of Cobb?
Here, I've driven Cobb. I just drove Jason Connor's Focus ST with the Mountain shit on, so we can bring that into the equation. Mm-hmm. His car was silent. His car felt like a truly factory upgraded car, in that it was really quiet, it was really refined, and it had exactly the same power band as stock, just more of it. The Cobb cars aren't like that. The Cobb cars are louder. You hear more turbo noise, you hear more blow off noise, you get more exhaust noise. They have a bigger shove than the Mountain cars, but they're less refined about it. They want to get more power, and they do it by making things a little less restrictive and a little louder and a little rowdier. And that's Jason's car was great. Mm-hmm. Jason Connor's Focus is really nice for a daily driver. It was quiet and it was quick, And it had this really nice shifter linkage he put in it. I think it's the Mountain shifter linkage, but I can't remember.
I believe it is.
It was nice, and it drove really good, but it was very, very quiet. And it was very, very kind of factory feeling, which is cool. That's what you want. But if you want more of like a tuner car vibe, Cobb is their stuff seems to be a little louder and a little more tunery.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd say that's exactly. So, I mean, that's the difference between thing. Thad's car and my car.
Yeah, the Porsche wasn't like that. The Porsche wasn't especially loud, or
those cars don't really get loud. I mean, like the race cars are loud, but other than that, turbo Porsches are usually just air.
I don't think that the average Porsche buyer would really put up with kind of the rowdy thing anyway on that.
No. Some of them do. Some of them want rowdy.
But guys buy GT3s, you know?
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Those are loud. The turbos, even with exhaust, never get loud. You just hear air.
Yeah. It's only when you get to, like, Anthony Taylor's, like, you know, 1,700 horsepower. Like, that's pretty loud, but, that's not compared to, like, what a 1,700 horsepower Corvette would sound like.
Oh, you know? No. Yeah.
That 1,700 horsepower Corvette or Viper is, like, the end of the fucking world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, Cobb, you know, obviously, full disclosure, they did pay my expenses to go there. They didn't pay me. They covered the flight and the hotel. And they gave me an EcoBoost Mustang to drive around. And that's the only way I can get down there. The only way I can go somewhere and do a racetrack test is if someone covers it. But everything I just told you about the cars, I told them right then and there. So, and the Mustang got much better once you put the proper size tires on it. But if it was going to SEMA. I get it.
Mm-hmm. If you go to SEMA and you take a picture of a car that's got 255s on it, all the 12-year-olds go, gay.
Yeah. And they did look nice. I was amazed you could actually fit a 305 in the back of that without rubbing. Yeah, it didn't stick out or anything. It was crazy. Hmm. So, Cobb was cool. Flew home from that. Went to Exotics Racing. You know that the Exotics Racing in LA?
It's a good track.
Yeah. So if you've never heard of Exotics Racing, they're in LA. Oops. They're in LA, they're in Vegas, and they have their own little racetracks. And by little I mean not that little, but they basically just build their own racetracks. There's one next to Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and there's one here in LA next to Fontana, California Speedway, Auto Club Speedway, fucking whatever.
Yeah. Just they take a huge parking lot, but they put down tarmac.
They built a race surface. Yeah. Right. So if you look
you went with me and Thad, right?
Yeah, we did the press. I just wanted people to understand.
If you look at an aerial picture of it, it looks like a parking lot because there's still stripes on it.
But I think it's at like a mile and a quarter.
It was 1.25 mile track.
Yeah.
And a very nice track, actually. Great place to go drifting. I mean, if you wanted to practice drifting, this is the perfect place.
Yeah.
And the racing surface is racetrack tarmac. They cut it and they put real tarmac, and they're about to actually resurface it too. So normally customers go there and you pay $500, then you get like five laps in a 458 or a Gallardo or a Huracan or a GT3 or whatever.
Or when I got it, they just got the new turbo, which is what I drove.
Yeah, they had a bunch of stuff out there. I think they own something like 40 cars or 50
and they've
cars.
Got the, are they still doing the Drift Z06?
They have a Drift Mustang you can get ride-alongs in.
Okay, because when we were there, they had a semi-pro drifter guy that was doing laps on a Z06 for like, I think it was like $80. He'd run you around like three times.
Yeah, they do that. They had a Mustang now, but whatever. So they invited me out because this is fucking crazy. So these guys, they have a lot of customers out there in Vegas and LA, and I guess some of them go back and back and back and back and drive every new car and you know whatever, and they are interested in racing. So what these guys did is they already have an infrastructure. They own two racetracks. They own a bunch of cars. They have technicians. They have instructors. They have whatever. So they're going, fuck it, we're going to start a racing series. So they're starting a spec series called EXR, obviously short for Exotics Racing, and they're using a spec car, which has been racing for a few years in Europe. It's called a Midget, but they've renamed it over here the EXR LV02.
The Midget, as in with jet?
I think so. It's French. And they look like little DTM cars. They're like tube frame, wide body, like little coupes. You got a picture, Zach?
I'm trying to pull it up. It's in French right now.
Just look up EXR LV02. I know it's not exactly a catchy name for a car, but
when I was just in Vegas 2 weeks ago, and like the aria on the video loop that you get when you're in the room, like every 5 minutes, EXR Racing commercials. So they're pushing it hard.
Oh yeah, I think they are pushing it. The season opener, I think, is like February, and they invited some media out to drive the cars, and so they're little coupes. They're not like. You can get them branded as whatever car you want. They'll print you like a plastic or a sticker grill for a BMW or an Audi or and headlights. And
can you send them your own graphics?
That has an Audi one on it. Yeah, right. they'll make it look like whatever the fuck you want. They'll make it look like anything.
It looks like a shrunken S5 DTM car.
Kind of, yeah, or like a shrunken CLK 63 DTM car, or it looks a little bit like the BMW Z4 GT3.
Yeah,
it's sort of like. Generic European coupe DTM that with the addition of the proper headlights and taillights can look like almost anything.
It's a DTM mutt bred with a miniature pincher.
Right. And it's about the size, it's a little tiny bit bigger than a Miata. Two seats.
That's cool.
It has a 2-liter, 240 horsepower Renault Sport 4-cylinder. And a Sedev 6-speed paddle shift gearbox that also has a lever. You could do paddles or you could do lever. No power brakes, no power steering, no fucking power anything.
Well, it weighs nothing.
Nice little, LCD display.
Race pack thing, I think?
It wasn't Race Pack brand. It was a better one idea than that. It was a. Race Pack was the shit for a while, but like I can't read a Race Pack with that crappy 1985 like. Numbers and letters, like I can't read that stuff. Like the new ones that have like a full color LCD with like things that look like gauges are much easier to read. And so this has that with shift lights. It's 1600 pounds. It's really light and it's got downforce. There's calm between. So there was, there was an instructor riding with me who was great actually, and he was in my ear. He had a fucking one way thing. He could talk to me. And, dude, it was so fun. They run the cars on 200 treadwear tires, on street tires. They don't run them on slicks.
And they do wheel-to-wheel how many cars at a
24
time?
Cars on the grid.
Whoa.
If you show up, $5,000 for a race, and it's like a 2 20-minute practices, and then a 20-minute qualifier, and then a 20-minute race. And it's like full hospitality. They handle everything. They'll make the car look like whatever the fuck you want. You know what I mean? They bring the car. They test them, so they're all the same. It's random drawing for cars, and it's like $5,000 a race weekend, which sounds like a lot, but if you know anything about, there's like nothing really between. There, American Endurance Racing is the newest one, but for a while there was nothing between Lemons Chump Car and World Challenge, and a Lemons race, if you have to fucking build the car, ends up being like $4,000 or $5,000 a person for like, for a team of four.
Yeah. Or well,
and you're racing a shit
spec
box
series, and that was about the other thing.
The what?
You can have like spec Miatas or something above that.
Miata, but spec racing a spec Miata is expensive. Yeah, I mean, to actually do it, and then AER is still even a little more than that, and then World Challenge is like $25,000 a weekend, like minimum to race something that's not even that fast or that great. So what these guys wanted to do was do something that's reasonably affordable for, a upper middle or, upper class, for a doctor. A doctor wants to go racing 3 weekends a year.
So instead of flying to Africa and shooting a lion,
you
can go racing for the weekend.
Yeah. And they have the full hospitality and they have instruction. You can get instructors and you can schedule a practice day. $2,000 private instruction full day at either Exotics Racing location, and they're going to do other tracks as well. They're going to use both these tracks and have races on them.
That's crazy.
They can do that, but they're also going to use other real tracks. It seems pretty cool, actually. And you can buy the car, but if you want to buy the car and race it in their series, you can't take it home.
Because
then you can cheat. So you can buy a car, and it's your car, and they'll bring it anywhere you want it. If you say, I want to do a track day with this thing at Thunderhill, they will bring that shit to Thunderhill.
Do you know what it costs for a car?
The car is about, they said, I don't know what the retail is. They said their cost on them was $70,000. So okay. He says he thinks that if you wanted one, it would end up being like, you know, 90 or something. Because they bought a bunch. It's great. No, it's
really
great.
Reasonable.
And the engine, you know, the service interval is like 4,000 kilometers or 4,000. I think it's 4,000 miles.
I mean, if you want to do a full season, it seems like it's immediately worth it. And then you can do traffic.
They're going to have 12 races next season. So it's really
60, so almost.
The car is super fun to drive. Like it's not crazy fast, but it feels quick. It corners really well. So they actually have telemetry on the cars, and they had telemetry on the exotics as well. I drove a Huracan. They let me do a review of a Huracan on their track. The Huracan with me driving, was only 0.6 seconds a lap faster than this little fucking race car. And the race car, it was half the weight and less than half the power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's how much power were you saying?
240 horsepower.
Yeah, the Huracan 6.10 now?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Less than half the power, a little less than half the weight. Dude, it was sick. It was so fun. They had to checker flag me twice. Like, I was not getting out of the car.
Looks really fun.
Also, not to brag, fastest time of the day. I went with Glucker.
Mark
and
Glucker,
Mark Baruth.
Right. Yeah.
And some other instructors from other public, or other journalists from other publications.
Any interesting moments?
One guy looped one, but like there was nothing to hit. I mean, no. Not, no. My friend Jen runs the PR for them. Not Jen Nicole, different Jen. Jen Horsey, who used to co-drive for Tanner.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
Yeah, she's cool. So she runs the PR. They're like a French company. They don't actually... I didn't know Exotics Racing was a French company, but it is.
Yeah,
so,
because all their instructors are all French.
Yeah, and so they didn't know any like American journalists, so Jen invited me and Glucker and whatever. Okay. And Mark. And so, Glucker, I think, ran a 104. Mark Baruth ran a 10055. And I ran a 10039.
Ooh.
My instructor didn't tell me his times on the car, but Mark's instructor was, Alex. God, I'm embarrassed. I can't remember his last name. Alex something. He was a very nice guy. He was Rookie of the Year in IndyCar in 2013.
Wow.
He ran a 59. So, like, we weren't that far off for 25 minutes in the car. Like, with a full day, me and Mark were like, dude, with a full day, we could get down 59. Like, no problem. Like,
yeah.
So
how many laps did you get?
I got a 5-lap session to get used to the car, and then I mounted cameras, and I got 10 laps with cameras.
Wow.
So my review is like 10 minutes. Dude, the fucking Audio-Technica lav, my shitty $30 lav, when I was in the car, I couldn't hear myself talking. This lav picked up the clearest audio you can imagine of me. It's perfect.
Wow.
I can't... Awesome. This Audio-Technica, I think it's ATX-3350, wired lav into a GoPro... It's $30 on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like this thing. I get perfect audio. That's watching amazing. And I go, I can't believe it. At one point during the review, my in-car camera falls off and the instructor catches it and like keeps shooting me handheld with it. And the audio like is great the whole time. I'm like, oh no, camera down, camera down. And I have, and they have, Exotics Racing does video with telemetry.
Yeah. Right.
So I have their camera, which is over my shoulder looking forward, with telemetry, and you actually have a nice black space on top where I can put my forward view from the roof and then my in-car as well. So it's actually going to be a pretty neat video, like with full telemetry and best lap and all that stuff.
Yeah, because they actually send you home with either a USB stick.
Yeah, they send me a USB stick full of video.
Or a DVD.
Yeah.
Your time also may have come down if you took the instructor out of the car, because then you had less weight.
They said that running, for my first day running a minute flat with an instructor in the car was, quote, very impressive.
Yeah. Well, if you take the guy out, you probably dip to 59 something.
And I was in the Huracan, I was the only person in a day to run under a minute in anything that wasn't an instructor. I ran a 59.9 in the Huracan.
Nice.
Which the instructor in the car goes, that wasn't bad. He goes, I guess that would be about a 102. And I go, oh, that's not so bad. It's close to the race car. And then the guy who dumped my footage, I guess when you pop in the card, immediately all the best laps come up. And he goes, dude, 59.9. Nice. I was like, ah, and I went back out and laughed at Kevin, my instructor. It was great. He was awesome. I would definitely call Kevin and do a day of $2,000 for a full day of private instruction in that car in either Vegas or LA. Sounds great.
That's pretty good.
Full day. Yeah. Probably get fucking 200 laps.
Yeah. In the
EXR race car. Yeah.
You know what? I think if I had the time, and I won't next week, it would be great to go watch all the fucking SEMA tools, go over to EXR and watch these guys just looping cars all fucking day.
Well, they're also doing SCCA pro licensing now at Exotics Racing. So you can go to Exotics Racing and they do a 3-day class, or you can do a 2-day class if you've done another school. Like if you do the 3-day school at Bondurant,
right,
you could then do the 2-day advanced licensing school at EXR, and you get an SCCA pro license, and then you can race wheel to wheel in World Challenge or Tudor. Like you could race like in a real series, you know. Or
you
these
too
EXR
could go
thing.
Race with Dax Shepard.
And apparently they have like real drivers on the line to come race these old cars. Like IndyCar drivers and Le Mans drivers are signing up to race these things.
Well,
like,
I mean, those guys, they train all the time in different ways. And this is like, instead of karting,
all
the rules apply. For them, that's like a go-kart to us.
Well, and they've been racing these cars in Europe for like 6 or 7 years. And they said there's races. They were showing us video. There's like 80 of these things on the fucking grid. They're all the same. Like, whoa. So the racing is like DTM, but like even fucking nuttier.
Wow.
Yeah, it's super cool. And I've heard rumblings of like Juan Pablo Montoya would be driving in like the season opener. Like that's so cool. That's
really and for
cool.
those guys to crack up a $70,000 car, they don't give a shit.
And they did make an excellent point. They said, look, our first races are going to be in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles. You know, if a racing guy wants to, you know, his family wants to go with him, you know, they're in like a fucking RV at Chuck Walla or something versus this, you know, they're in Vegas, they're in LA, you know, he was selling it. I mean, he was definitely selling it, but he made
but
a point. He,
when we were at the firm, they said that there was a guy who came in from England and he sent his family to Disney World and then he went to a 2-day rally.
Yeah.
School. It's like same thing.
Yeah. True.
If you're and, close to
so it was super cool. The cars were really fun. I think you can do a lapping day in the car without having any intention of doing wheel-to-wheel. They're doing a time attack. Mark and I are really pushing hard for them to do a media time attack day in these cars so we can find out who you should listen to for your sports car advice and who you should
that
not listen
to.
That
needs to be filmed.
It would be filmed.
Someone could just, someone listening could just go get the issues of publications and find the times in all the articles and then compile that list.
Yeah. But suffice to say, if you rate a review of the EXR from someone who ran a 101 or slower, I'm just kidding. Jeff was fine. He was fine. there was someone else who won't be named.
Yeah,
who I won't name out loud, but he went full gear, gloves, Hans device. I mean, really went full gear in the car. And ran like a 107.
I've been in a car with that person before, and that doesn't surprise me.
I'll tell you after the show who it is. I'm not going to blow up somebody.
No,
don't.
People have different levels of experience, you know.
It feels like it's break time. My bladder's telling me it's break time. Okay, we're going to come back, and when we come back, let's see. I finally drove an R32 Skyline. I caught up with Mike Heintz and drove his fucking boss. Have you seen this boss?
No.
Oh boy.
Oh god.
It's the boss. It has earned its name. And then an F body that didn't suck. And then I think we've got some questions from Facebook.
And I drove a car in Mexico City.
Oh yeah. All right. No, Mexico.
That's an adventure in and of itself.
In the Mexican Grand Prix, right?
Yeah.
Smoking Tire Podcast is brought to you by SoFi, a leading marketplace lender that offers student loan refinancing, mortgages, and personal loans for ambitious professionals. If you're carrying high student loan balances, you could save thousands by refinancing and consolidating your federal and private student loans at a lower rate. SoFi borrowers save on average $14,000 over the life of their loans. In addition to savings, SoFi members benefit from unemployment protection. Should you lose your job, SoFi pauses your payment and provides access to a career services team for your personalized career planning and job search assistance. To check out a full list of products and benefits, visit SoFi.com/TST. And for a limited time, listeners of the Smoking Tire are eligible for a special $300 welcome bonus when they refinance their student loans with SoFi. Just go to SOFI.com/TST for this special offer and find your rate online within minutes. SOFI.com/TST. Wheelwell.com is the automotive social network you have been waiting for. From exotics to off-roaders and Japanese stuff, Corvettes, whatever you're looking for, you can find it on Wheelwell. You want to learn how to modify your own car and see what other people did, see how wheels look on different cars, and find enthusiasts in your area to meet IRL with. That's at Wheelwell.com. Also, if you want to do a Smoking Tire one take with me, send your Wheelwell profile to Matt@thesmokingtire.com or hit us up through Facebook/thesmokingtire. Forza Motorsports 6 got in the office. Zach was playing Forza Motorsports 6 on multiplayer.
Sure was.
Tag?
Yeah, virus.
Just smash into people, basically.
Yeah, it was, avoid being smashed.
The first thing I saw was half your screen was gone due to damage on the vehicle.
That's true.
Driving the world's worst Subaru, most crashed Subaru anyway. Experience unrelenting action in the most beautiful and comprehensive racing game of this generation. Recently named this year's best racing game at Gamescom. There's 1080p, 60 frames per second, all the tracks you want, including Circuit of the Americas, Lime Rock, Sonoma, and of course the Nürburgring. Celebrate the thrilling world of motorsport, reliving classic races and epic rivalries in the new 70-plus hour career mode. Forza Motorsport 6 is available exclusively for Xbox One and available at leading online retailers and electronic stores nationwide. Visit ForzaMotorsport.net for more details. And friend us or race us at TST Racing. I never know who you're going
to
get.
I find the Nürburgring track in that game to be so annoying. Just Why? The way the cars pile up in it with the AI and everything. Like, I love that game. Don't get me wrong. Something about that track, every time I drive it, I'm like, oh, fuck this track.
They don't call it the green hell for nothing.
Yeah.
What did someone, I think it was Jackie Stewart or someone said, if you're enjoying racing at the Nürburgring, you're not going fast enough.
That's very funny. Yeah. Probably very true.
Yeah. And, of course, Dylan Optics is the official eyewear of the Smoking Tire. You know those cool sunglasses I wear? Go to thesmokingtire.com, click on the Dylan banner, and get a pair for yourself. And if you do, I'll send you a free T-shirt as a thank you for supporting the people who support the Smoking Tire. Righto. Yeah. Some one takes yesterday. Fucking Angeles Crest Highway was rough. They graded the whole road. There's, like, gravel all over it. And winds were, like, probably 40 to 45 miles an hour up there. Just like dust storms everywhere, and it was rough, so we had to bail down big Tahunga, where they have the nice new tarmac on Angeles Forest Highway. So we were driving on that instead. Nice. It was better, dude. I was coming home from that shit, like, and I, this has never happened before, where, you know, you hear about the rocks come down off the fucking cliffs and, mm-hmm. like, land in the road. So you have to pay attention when you're driving in the canyons, because you could come around a corner and there could just be a big, like,
you lost
soccer ball
sized rock.
You
lost a wheel
rock.
That way.
Yeah. And, but what's never happened is I've never had to swerve to avoid a rock that was actually falling in real time.
Like, whoa. Egg rock?
Like, probably softball-sized.
Okay.
Big enough that you don't want it landing on your car.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I'm driving, and like one rock comes and bounces and lands down, which got my attention. You know, it happened like 10, 15 feet in front of me. As I see this one smash on the ground, I see another one falling, and I swerved into the other lane, and it right next to the car, and I
he's like dodging bombs.
Yeah, the Fiesta. Yikes. Too. I was glad. If I had the Lexus that day, I probably would not have been able to make that swerve. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe not back.
But yeah, no, I've never had to make that move before. It was eyes up yesterday.
That's the thing. We need the water badly, and we're going to get a lot of it apparently this winter. But that's the one thing that's going to suck. We're probably not going to be able to drive a lot just because there'll be rocks all over the place with all the rainfall.
They do. I think they do a pretty good job most of the time of sweeping the roads within a couple hours. Usually by, if it rains a lot, you wait one day, and then by the third day, it's all right. Yeah. You know what I mean? Fortunately, we can go any day we want. We don't need to, like, wait for sunday or whatever. But But it was like just driving out there. Like we eventually found a stretch of road like deep in Angeles Forest Highway that was clear. But just driving from Angeles Crest to Angeles Forest, I mean, every corner had a pile of gravel or a fucking tree branch or a rock, and it was just like, oh, this isn't going well at all. So, and it was cold, but we made it work. So I drove a Skyline R32. It was a GTST. Mm-hmm. So it was a narrow body car, rear wheel drive, simple, fairly
basic.
Looks
a lot like an S13.
Yeah, a little bit. No, I mean, it's a Skyline.
A narrow body, I think, looks like an S13.
It doesn't look as, you know, as
it's not
deep
Fast and
into what you're thinking. Yeah, right. It's more, it's definitely, but apparently it gets a lot of attention in Las Vegas, where the guy was from. So it was an RB20. So it's a 2 liter straight six. So it was really.
That was a little pistons.
Yeah, it was really smooth. Like really smooth, like silky smooth power. Mm-hmm. Not crazy fast. I'd say it made maybe 250, 275 horsepower at the crank.
Wow. Okay.
But like pretty light actually, you know, with the
BMW-ish
kind of, but faster than any BMW of that period.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and what's the small, I'm trying to think of the small.
This was, it was an 89.
Is like a 2.5.
Five.
Yeah.
So that's a little, those are some little pistons.
But and it was smoother than a BMW. BMWs have a bit of like a rasp to them. Mm-hmm. They're still very smooth, but this was smoother. And really good steering. Usually stuff from like the late 80s and early 90s has like no on-center feel at all, but like great steering and really comfortable and good brakes. And reasonably quick, actually. Quick enough to have a good time in, for sure.
It's like, probably, what, just a hair over 3,000 pounds?
Yeah, I mean, it was at least as fast, it felt like, as like a new WRX. You know, like around that kind of level. So it was quick. Yeah, revved pretty high, like 7,800 RPM or something.
Suspension or anything?
Stock.
Okay.
And it was all right. It was nice. I mean,
like soft or stiff or...
It rode well. It would be a good like road trip car, for sure. Like, I'm not sure I'd want to do a lot of track days in that. But, like, it was okay in the canyons. It handled pretty good. Like, it was definitely,
well,
like...
And to me, the interesting thing is, we're like, yeah, it's pretty good now. But it's how many years
it
old?
It must have been incredible.
Yeah,
I mean,
back
it must
then,
have been great.
That was... I mean, the only thing that probably would have gone up against it would have been the
you know
turbo
what? I can't... It may have had a little bit of suspension work. I can't really recall. It'll be in the video. I'm sorry. I've driven so many cars, it's really hard to keep it straight. But, it really, like, I've said I'm not the biggest fan of the R32 compared to, but like, once I got in it and drove it, I was like, even with the smaller engine, even without the all-wheel drive, even without the big power or the gauge or any of it, it still was sufficiently close enough to that R34 to scratch the itch.
Wow.
For sure. Like, it was really good. And this guy said he bought this car for 7 G's.
What?
Yeah.
Where?
I think he said he got it like 2 years ago for 7 G's, and he said the same car would probably be about 12 or 13 now, but you can get them. You can get them. And of course, he lives in Nevada, so there's no issue registering that. Here's the bad news. 10 minutes after I drove it, he crashed it.
Ooh.
And I don't know if it's totaled, but it was a front-end collision.
Yeah, it looked messy.
Yeah. He didn't tell me exactly what happened. I was already gone. I left, and he came down the hill behind me and apparently crashed it like right in front of that Shell station. He didn't say exactly what happened, but he did sort of imply it was his fault. I don't
maybe he's turning left across the
I don't know. I didn't see him drive at all, so I don't know. And he was could not have been nicer. I mean, he came all the way from Vegas for me to drive the fucking car. I felt so terrible.
Oh, that really sucks.
I was like already in like downtown by the time I realized, because he didn't have my phone number. He sent me an email, and I didn't look at the email until I got to like my next thing.
It sucks when you get in an accident like near where you live and you get your car
so
coming back to your house.
So far from home.
At that point, you really have no option but to get rid of the car.
No, he said he was he said he rented a U-Haul pickup truck and a trailer and was going to tow it back to Vegas. Okay. It didn't seem totaled, but it wasn't pretty.
The good thing is that now that more of those cars are coming into the U.S. because of the law, is they'll be bringing body panels.
He can
over.
Get parts. You can get parts.
Well, I mean, you could always get parts, but you ship them from Japan.
Yeah.
You know, overnighted.
No, you can get them from Canada.
Yeah,
or but whatever.
It'll be more. They're more accessible now than they were. That's
it was a bummer, but you know, maybe it's an excuse to get some more power out of it or put a better whatever in it. I don't know.
There you go. I mean, that's always, if you have a car and you like driving, usually you're like, well, I got to replace this thing anyway.
It was a super bummer. You hate to hear about something like that happening.
I met the most Canadian man in the world last weekend when I went up to the Canyons after the car show. And he was, you know, very nice guy from Quebec. And he's wearing like a t-shirt, but like nice slacks on. Mm-hmm. Super nice guy. And he's like, oh, I don't see too many Skylines around here. And I'm like, well, they were just legalized. He's like, oh, really? He's like, we've had them for like 15 years. He's like, I bought one for my son when he was 17. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the difference here.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to blow up his spot in the video by mentioning the crash. I think the video can just end and that'll be it. I don't see the need to.
No, yeah. It's not the story.
It's not, yeah. But it's a fucking shame, though, I mean, because it was a really nice. You would love it.
I'm $13,000 is a.
They are affordable. GTSTs are. This one had like 141,000 kilometers on it.
That's really nice.
And it was really clean. The only thing it kind of needed was there was some like wind whistle from the open frame doors. You know what I mean? Like it probably needed some new moldings around the windows. But and he said those were expensive. He said they were like hundreds of dollars. Like I think he said to do all the windows was like $800 or $900. It was expensive. But he lives in Nevada, so you know.
Yeah,
it had air conditioning and had a fucking radio worked.
I always go back and forth because I love all wheel drive and a Skyline to me. Like, if you're gonna do it like that. But I also obviously love rear wheel drive, so it's more attainable. It's so tempting.
If you were gonna do one, would you keep the Crown Vic around? So, or would you just have the
Nissan? I'm pretty sure that you could daily one of those cars and it wouldn't be too much of a headache.
I would probably only have one car just because I have street parking and insurance and all those things. I wouldn't have two cars. I would totally daily it. I mean, everything I've read from Doug and talked to you about, they're comfortable. They work. Like,
they're comfortable. They're fast.
It's not some crazy spaceship.
You know, it could be a hassle sometimes being a right-hand drive car.
Occasionally, if you don't like a drive-through or toll pay tolls very often.
Yeah.
The parking booths can be the parking garages.
I mean, I'd get a stick. I'd have one of those reacher sticks. Not even kidding. Problem solved.
You mean for
old people?
The old people?
Yeah.
That's actually not a terrible idea.
Remember France with the SLS?
Yeah.
If we'd had a reacher stick,
it would have been a lot better.
You had to get out of the car at like
every
toll booth.
5 kilometers across the entire country.
And I bet you those sticks sell like motherfuckers in the UK.
It was miserable.
We didn't see one in the gas station. They'd be smart to do that because gullwing door.
It was
climb
so
out,
embarrassing.
New business opportunity.
Gullwing door, stormtrooper, SLS, fat American with non-working credit card.
Yeah. And then JF like,
because you didn't have a chip and pin card then, did you?
I did.
Oh, you
no,
did?
The first time I went to France, I had that fucking problem.
Yeah.
And the second time, we're going through France, I got all three of my credit cards replaced with world, quote, chip cards, and 0 out of 3 of them actually
did
worked.
Did you notice
in
they finally started turning them on here in the U.S.?
It's only in toll booths. Everywhere else, they were fine. Stores, shit, all that shit worked. The French toll booths, nope.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I've had a couple purchases with chips in the U.S.
They have to turn it on now.
I need an LLC in Delaware or something, I guess, because that's the only way I could get a Skyline here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to register it out of state. That's the only way to do it.
Yep.
But
you still can't register one in California?
Nope. It's a 49-state car. Smog.
Yeah.
It's a smog thing.
I figured the 25 year. I don't know why, but I figured the exemption would work.
It does not work for Skyline in California.
We'll see how next.
There are probably some other cars you could get that would pass smog that you could do, but not.
It's unfortunate because if you put it on a sniffer, it probably would pass the sniffer.
Probably would. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not known for being a dirty engine. I think it probably would pass.
It's a 2-liter six cylinder.
Yeah.
With catalytic converters and everything. I mean,
I assume so. Yeah,
it's not like Japan's letting everybody roll around without fucking cats.
Yeah, but anyway, it was. I realized that even if that, I mean, that right there was pretty much the lowest spec Skyline you're going to find in America, and even that was enough to be pretty fucking entertaining to drive. It was really nice. Like, not crazy fast, but like quick, fun. You could have a good time. You could definitely drift it. I mean, and they do make parts for it. You can get shit for that and tune up that engine, or you can buy, you know, fucking Nick Hogan's got an RB26 at his shop on a stand.
An RB26 GTST would be.
Yeah, I think he wants like so $2,500 awesome. Bucks for it. Like, it's not expensive at all.
No, those motors, I mean, they're all over Japan. You can import them all day.
Yeah. So it would be, you know, you can get a chassis. They got this fucking, the sedans, the GTST sedans. Those
are tempting just for work reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, they look okay, but it would be a really cool camera car.
Yes, it would. It really
to
would.
To me, that's like getting...
Or is the Stagia. The Stagia is really the camera car.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Skyline wagon.
That would be. That would be sick.
It's like getting an M3 wagon. Uh-huh. Or an M3 sedan.
I think the Stagia would be super cool. Like, they're really neat looking. The interior is the same as a Skyline. Anything you could do to a Skyline, you could do to one of those.
I bet the Skyline's more reliable than... Because I love the E36 sedan, but I'm afraid to own one. I'm just afraid.
I think the
electronics and stuff, like dumb shit, like the power windows and whatever, I think you'll probably would end up working better in the Nissan.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And then weird engine computer stuff and all that shit.
Nick keeps telling me, he's like, dude, parts aren't that expensive. He's like, the little shit that goes wrong in these cars, it's like just Nissan stuff. It's not that, it's, you know, a lot of those parts are
Nissan,
ubiquitous.
Especially of that era, were not cars that were overly complicated. They were pretty basic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the switches they use in that, and also a 180SX 240.
Yeah.
Like, they use them in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Nissan switchgear from the 90s, that was at their peak. That was the best shit they ever made. I mean, that shit does not fucking break. I mean, we had a Sentra in the family. We put like 300,000 fucking miles on. It was perfect when we sold it.
Yeah.
The buttons all still feel good when you drive those old things.
Yeah. So anyway, now I'm looking at Skylines. Now I go, okay.
Let's go back to that podcast from what? Two months ago?
The R32, it's not my favorite stylistically, but driving it is sufficiently close enough to that experience that it will, in fact, tide me over until I can get an R34 legally.
I'm just pointing back to 2 or 3 months ago, you're like, I'm done. I'm not buying any more cars.
Well, here's the thing. If I get it, I'd have to sell the Corvette. Which is, I don't have room for more cars. I can't get more cars. Different cars
you can exchange.
The net number of cars.
So this is your loophole for yourself.
The net number of cars would be the same.
You're just trading lunch items.
And in my own defense, I would say that my Corvette is not an appreciating asset, nor will it be anytime soon.
I just question whether or not you're going to end up missing it.
That is a possibility. That is a possibility.
I don't think you would.
But I don't think so. I think I've had my fun with that car, and it... I don't know.
I think the Mustang...
Hannah keeps telling me not to sell it. Hannah's like, no, don't sell it.
The Mustang will scratch the same.
That's what I said. But Hannah's like, you're going to miss it. She goes, do you want me to buy it? I'll buy it from you, and then you can visit it. And then, and then when you change...
Say yes.
And then when you change your mind, you'll buy it back.
Say yes to that. Actually, don't say yes to that, because then you're indebted...
Then I'm indebted. No, we got to be unequal.
Right.
But for a second, she was like, I'll buy it. I go, sold.
Right. Oh, fine.
Would she really?
I'd buy it
for
15 grand.
Would she use it? No.
No.
No. She wouldn't. She would buy it because she's wonderful and knows.
And
that
she just knows that you're going
to
probably.
She thinks that I would probably miss it. I'm not so sure I would miss it because I have access to it whenever I want and I don't drive it that much.
Exactly.
It's not like, it doesn't have like giddy, you know, like the DeLorean's like giddy 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. The Mustang is high school kid, reliving high school kid. The Corvette just isn't, maybe it's just because it's not new and exciting anymore, but that's the thing.
I very much think that's the case.
But also smart, I think investor me says that if I find the right R32, it could be a not huge investment grade, but an investment grade car. Whereas a C5 Corvette is not an investment-grade car.
Mm-hmm. No, a C5, if you had a Z06, I'd say really hang on to it.
I mean, maybe if I did and it was stock and had 5,000 miles on it, but it's going to be a long... Those cars don't have the durability built in. Like, it's not like chrome and steel. It's, you know, it's fiberglass and plastic and stuff like that. Like, I just...
I think they're holding up pretty well as far as that goes, but...
I don't see a ton of... I mean, they'll hold up, but when do you think those are going up?
No, I think they'll creep. I think the C5 Z06 would creep.
The Z06, I think, is bottomed out.
Because look at what happened with Porsche. Anything, people are getting more focused on driver-centric cars
Maybe, but in that case, the C6, Z06 is so much better. And it is a ton of them.
Rising tide, all boats.
I guess, but that's a big fucking tide. There's a lot of boats.
I think the C6 Z06 is going to be in exactly the same situation as the 997 GT3 now.
Probably.
And that it's probably bottomed out.
Eventually, I would say probably.
I think you could buy it. You could make a few grand on a C5 Z06 in probably the next 5 years. You won't make a lot.
I could make more on a Skyline.
Probably.
Most importantly, it would be more comfortable with my fucked up back. Those seats are great
really?
In the Skyline. It's a normal size car. It's not a little car, you know.
Yeah.
The seats are great. There's enough leg room. There's enough shoulder room.
Which is hilarious because it's a Japanese car. All of that defies logic.
It does, but it works.
They know what humans are shaped like.
It's a comfortable car to drive. It has tilting and extending steering column, you know. You can fit almost any aftermarket seat in it if that's what you wanted to do. It's not, you know, the Corvette, I can't really make more
leg room. The Corvette's a special case in that there are few cars that are that limited to seats.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A huge tunnel.
What sucks is the stock seats in the Corvette were super roomy but shitty seats. Mm-hmm. To get a good seat in there, you either have to spend an unholy amount of money on something like those Caravaggio seats that are like $2,500.
Or maybe even more.
Whatever. Yeah. They're really expensive, and a normal race seat just won't fit properly. And we did the best we could with my car, but there's not much else to do. It would need to be meaningfully roomier for that, because my legs are on a weird angle when I drive it. My knees are bent in a weird way, and then my accelerator foot is kind of cocked back, and it's like...
It'll be interesting just to see what mine's like when I get back. I'm gonna put my new seats in my car when I get back from SEMA. It'd be interesting just to see how different it is.
What seats did you buy?
I bought the Corbos.
Oh, okay.
So, we'll see. I mean, because they're...
Your car actually has a roomier footwell than my car,
too. It
does.
The C6 is a little more...
I tested at Shift Sector. I tried some guys' seats, and it just it seemed like there was more room to work with there in general.
It's a little wider.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw those in. I'm really curious to see how they fit. I mean, they're design-wise, they're kind of a ripoff of GT3 seats.
That's okay.
So
people buy fake GT3 seats on eBay and put them in cars, and they look cool.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we'll
see. I don't know. I'm looking at some Skylines, and I'd have to sell the Corvette because it's too much. But I would probably drive it more. The bottom line is I'd probably drive a Skyline more than I drive the Corvette because it's easier to drive, and it's got more ground clearance.
It's new. It's true. Toy.
It's got more ground clearance. It's more like it's less race car-y, no harnesses, you know, none of that kind of it's easier to get in and out of. You know, the Corvette with the roof on and those racing seats is actually, if you can't open the door all the way, it's tricky to get in and out of that car.
Yeah. See, so, I think that's the biggest downside to that car. I think your car is very well put together otherwise. I think it's that the fact that you've got harnesses and race seats in, that's what really ruins it to use it regularly.
Yeah, and just that it's, you know, it's not a great run-around errands car.
No,
if it's not comfortable.
It's totally
know,
not.
You know. But for someone smaller than me, it would be. It's just, you know, fat. What are you going to do? So our friend Mike Hines, we filmed his old car, the blue Mustang. We did it on Tuned, like the first season of Tuned, I think, right?
And he was on the car show also.
Yeah, and it was like an RTR package with a supercharger.
That car was all over the internet.
Yeah, it was the blue whore of Mustangs. And
I think wasn't it the first consumer RTR car?
Might have been.
It was up there. It was one of them. I remember he did get some kind of a deal to use it at SEMA or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a show car. He had a lot of parts hookups.
He got that car real early and really jumped on the free parts development kind of cycle and got like everything for free. And Mike likes to go to the track. He's always at the track. But that old car was like 600 wheel or 650. It was too much power. It was too much power for that chassis.
Yeah.
So now he has a Boss 302, and I did a one take with it. And dude, this thing is badass, man. Yeah. 475 at the wheels, all motor. It's got like an MGW shifter, which is like a mechanical linkage.
I got an MGW shifter in my Vette. They make great shifters.
And it's like, you know, it's full maximum motorsports suspension, like everything. And it is a mean motherfucker. This thing, it really feels like a race car. It's his daily. I can't believe it's his fucking daily driver.
But knowing him, I can.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It was awesome. Really fast, really planted, 295s at all four corners, like, handled awesome, like, very little steering input required. Just a nutty, nutty, perfect Mustang.
Did he speed up the rack on that? Because I don't remember those being super
no,
fast.
No, but when he put 295s on the front with maximum, yeah. It's a tubular K-member front suspension they put on. It changed, the maximum shift changes the geometry of it, yeah.
So it's a really nice. So it's takes it's the badass. Boss 302-ness and just raises.
So he's probably got a little more cast or a little more camber.
And he, I guess he was at Willow like 2 weeks ago with the car, and Conrad Grunwald was there. He was he's a Formula D guy, but he races in like Tudor as well.
Okay.
And he had a Z28, and he drove Mike's Mustang also. And the Z28 was only like 1 second faster around Willow, and it has ceramic brakes and Trofeo R tires.
Wow.
Which are, and Mike's running R888s, which are good tires, but not Trofeo Rs.
Yeah.
And it was really impressive. Conrad said that with the same tires, the Mustang would be the same, just as fast.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's probably more comfortable than the
It was stiff. Yeah, it was pretty stiff. I mean, it wasn't painful stiff, but it was pretty stiff. But air conditioning, radio, not a race car.
The Z28 that we drove did not have air conditioning.
I know.
So
they, you should.
That car was.
That's a dumb option if you delete that.
Those are going to be the ones that are worth money.
Are you guys serious about going fast? Because if you're not serious, then get the fuck out of here.
Here's the thing. The air conditioning has a switch.
No, it's about the weight.
The weight, 50 pounds of air conditioning, 40 pounds of whatever.
On a 3,800-pound car, you'll feel that 50 pounds.
Yeah. I'm not wearing underwear right now for weight savings.
Ah.
Forget who was... Oh, Spike was in Germany. Not in Germany. I'm sorry. Spike was in Atlanta. He calls me and he's like...
Well, there's a difference there.
He was doing the GT3 RS thing in Atlanta,
Porsche.
Porsche
place.
Yeah, and there was a Porsche executive who I will not name, but whose name I know, who they were having dinner with and talking. And they were talking about weight reduction and stuff like that. And the Porsche executive said, "The Americans, they always talk about the weight reduction, and yet they are so fat."
It's the perfect point, though.
He says, "I tell you what, you lose 100 pounds, I'll take 100 pounds out of the car."
I want to shake that guy's hand, and I'm not trying to be a dick to people that are fat. Yeah, but it's
hey, look who
I love that.
That's hilarious.
I fucking
it's
love
so
that
hilarious.
When I look on LS1 Tech, because the LS1 Tech is like it's the super. It's all the engine builders. Like Tom Nelson is a guy that like puts shit up there, so it's like the geeky end of it. It's not like Corvette Forum, where it's a bunch of guys in fucking Hawaiian shirts arguing over stupid wheels. These guys in the LS1 Tech, they're like, dude, why are you worrying about cutting 30 pounds out of this and 30 pounds out of that? You weigh 350 fucking pounds. And they just lay it on the line every goddamn time. It's brilliant.
It's funny. It's like the people that keep adding parts, and we've talked about this, you should just go to driving school.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to fix a problem with parts. And it happens in any hobby. It's every hobby.
You try to dial out that understeer for 7 years. It turns out you have no idea how to trail brake.
Like the shooting competition I went to, there's guys that are super fast, like Corey and the rest of his team, and there's these guys that are building these $2,000 guns, and I mean, there's
and
a guy, wait, he was like 6'8", 350, and you're like, you just need to run faster and just be better at movement, not build this thing, because in between the times you're shooting are slow and sloppy.
Yeah.
You know? That's really funny.
Well, I'm on both sides of the coin, because a lot of people on YouTube are like, well, he's talking about how fast it is. Imagine if he didn't weigh fucking that much. You know, I get that. But you can only say that if you beat me around the track. Mm-hmm. If you don't beat me around the track, you don't really get to say shit like that.
I've gone karting with you, and I am slower than you. Tom's faster, and that's like a weight.
Tom's only faster if he starts ahead of me. He's not. Tom can't get around me even if he is faster.
Passing in karting is really hard.
Yeah.
Especially when we do shit like any place that the karts are the same.
Yeah.
It's so, someone needs to fuck up.
Well, usually. And there's also the variance of how well each respective car has been put together.
Very
too.
True. There's a lot of weird variables. But I mean, usually those places, passing room is only if someone makes
I am very confident in saying when I go to those situations, I am solidly mid-pack every fucking time.
Yeah. It's just funny that they said it. Because, there's like a race of specs that happens with press. It's always, did they add enough power for the next model, or did they take enough weight or whatever? And sometimes you don't really need to change anything, but they have to change it just for PR.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Fat people. me, whatnot.
You know what?
Hey, I was the fattest guy at that EXR thing and in all those fucking cars, and I was on the fucking podium.
You know I'm not making fun of you, right?
After
having met those guys, you've probably got 100 pounds on the little Frenchman. Race car drivers are not big people usually, yeah. They are French race car drivers.
I saw Lewis Hamilton in person the other day.
Oh, yeah,
and
he's little.
He is very small.
Yeah.
He's like short. I thought he was taller than he is.
No, he's like 5'5", right?
Yeah, yeah. Chris Harris stands over him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What was, you were in Mexico?
Mexico City.
What the fuck was there?
Off the grid. So they have an F1 race this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you see that city, you're like, how can you build a racetrack here and not fix some of this stuff? Remember Panama? How many telephone wires there are just everywhere? Yeah. Yeah. With, like, no discernible order.
Yeah.
It's like I looked up in the buildings in like the neighborhoods, not near the skyscrapers, the other stuff, and I'm like, all right, there's got to be a cable car somewhere.
There's
no cable car.
Wealthiest man in the world made his fortune on those lines.
Carlos Slim. Telecom.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Mexico City.
It looks like a fishing net.
Mexico City might be the densest. I think Mexico City might be the densest population in the world.
You're right. It's 20 million people, and the sprawl is bigger than Los Angeles. But it's not that much.
I don't think it's big. Densest is like Singapore or Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah. I think it's
somewhere that's vertical.
Yeah,
you're probably right. Mexico City has some.
It
kind
might
of
be
record.
The highest population of any city in the world.
Yeah,
that's
Mexico
totally
City
possible.
Is a big.
It's
big
a. It's, place. It's. We drove for 20 minutes, and you saw no change in density of buildings. And by the way, you think L.A. has weird zoning laws? Like, oh, there's a subway, and then a law office, and then an airport.
Hold on.
This place wins.
You're assuming there is zoning.
Yeah, this was like HSBC skyscraper, giant bank, and they have a sign in the front that's like, what did they say? Like, largest foreign investment of any bank. And last year they got in trouble for funneling money from like narcos. You're like, yeah, no shit. But right behind them will be a
like
tiny
slums.
Shack
yeah.
that sells awesome tacos, and next to that is like a Verizon store, and then next to that is a strip club, like, and corrugated paneled roof house with a clothesline, and then the embassy. I swear to God, there was all this shit in one block. It makes no sense.
I think the only way you're going to beat that is like Colombia or Rio.
Yes, but even there, I think they have like, well, the favela is separated from the rich place.
Yeah, I think Rio has like neighborhoods.
Yeah.
This was pretty random. They have a drainage issue in their highways. Now I know why.
Mexico has drainage issues
in general. There was just 3 lanes to 1 because the puddle was too big to ford on the highway during rainstorm. But okay, so driving there, not as manic as Panama until there's a red light and people just, they don't care. I stopped at a red light, or no, sorry, I was waiting. The light turned green, and I'm just watching cars continue to stream across the intersection. I'm like, do we both have a green light? Is there something? And it was just until cars nosed out or a cop like out of his car stopped traffic, people just go, and left turn lanes mean nothing.
They go until they have any reason, not
you know
to
what,
go.
Bro?
Right? And there's no traffic infractions.
I've noticed a little bit of that. I'm going to call it Mexican taillighting now. That happens now in L.A. where they're like, so long as the car in front of me is moving, I'm going to keep moving.
Well, L.A., there's like a rule that when the light's red, because making left turns here is impossible.
Yeah.
And no one would go anywhere. So like, I think it's like 2 cars after red is
can
allowed.
Can go, yeah.
Like legally allowed.
Yeah, like if
I'm
you're 2 cars
I'm seeing it get egregious,
the,
though, where it's like
it does
10
get,
cars,
it gets
12
worse.
Cars.
Yeah.
It does.
I see the 2 cars a lot. If it was 2 cars, like in the second car is on the crosswalk, the first car is in the intersection, light turns red, those 2 cars are good.
The cars that are out in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of times in Torrance over the last month or so, I've gotten to the point where they've run it for so long, my light is no longer green.
I drove over the rumble strips because. So, you know, like a roundabout, normally the cars go around it. But in Mexico City, sometimes they go straight across. Sometimes they make it a 4-way intersection. Sometimes they go counterclockwise. Sometimes they go clockwise. And this all happens in the space of One light change.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding, man. Because I needed to go straight across this roundabout. And I'd driven a car for 10 minutes there. And I'm sitting. You have to watch. You're observing, like, okay, what are the locals doing?
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, so everybody's going around this, like a four-way intersection. So I'm just going to go straight to the right. And the car I'm next to, who's to the right of me,
he's going to go left.
He goes left. He crosses my nose, and he's going to get on the other side of the fountain going left. The cars to his right are going to go across to the right, but some of them are going to circle the 270 degrees and make a left. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Because they're just like, fuck dealing with the circle. We're going to go this way.
Like,
it's complete free-for-all.
It's the most narcissistic driving. I'm going where I need to go. So I start crossing across, and you're just making sure you don't hit anybody. And then I'm trying to get in line as an order. You know, okay, I'm going to get in this line behind these cars, and we're going to slowly go straight. And I watch this car to my right just go straight, and there's a V made of kind of those, like, half a bowling ball rumble strip, you know, like telling lanes.
Yeah.
If you hit this, it won't pop your tire, but
the guy went straight, didn't lift.
Yeah. just went straight. He's like, I'm going to cut off three cars and get ahead. And I was like, what an asshole. 10 seconds later, I'm getting pushed down the V because these cars won't let me in. And I'm like, fuck it. I just drove over the roundabout. It is anything you want to do. And there are cops everywhere
and
with
none
machine
of them
guns.
Cares.
No, I don't know what they're doing. They're going somewhere. Everyone's got their – and they all have their red and white, red and blue lights on. And no one cares. No one's moving over for them. I don't know what's happening. I don't know.
Is that the craziest driving you've seen worldwide so far?
Panama seemed more random.
Yeah.
Like, no lane. Panama seemed like no one cared at all. This was like everyone's kind of knows they're all trying to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And Panama just seemed like eight guys trying to go the same direction.
Yeah, Panama was a fucking zoo.
I give you South America. I raise you India.
Oh, you're probably right.
Oh, yeah. India's got to be
India,
crazy.
India, highways don't even have dedicated directions.
Yeah, no, that does win. That's terrifying for sure. I've never been there. I heard this British chick on the production company said that Africa was weirder because they drove a highway across South Africa, and it was one lane width. And if you came to another car, which they didn't for 3 hours, which she said was in its own way kind of creepy because you die, you had to like drive down a very soft, steep shoulder, you know. So you hope your car can get back up it. But man, it was. But for us, you know, we like driving. It's fun because you're like, there's no laws.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was the opposite of Japan, where Japan had like the worst traffic ever, but it was super orderly.
Well, Japan, everybody emits pheromones like ants, and they just know where to shuffle.
Let me tell you about public bus hubris, because there are lanes that are dedicated to buses, and they're usually only separated by two small faded white lines that are covered in dirt. And I saw a car driving down one of those, approaching an intersection to go left. And this doesn't make any sense. So let's say the cars are going north on this street. Uh-huh. Well, the buses are going south.
Okay.
So the bus lane is going up the head on. This guy's in the left lane, and he sees a bus coming, and he slows down. He's like, oh, I got to get out of this lane. The bus is not slowing down. And the bus continues to not slow down until this guy gets out of the lane by, I swear to God, 2 feet. The bus does not slow down, just keeps going right past him. They're like, fuck you, you're in my lane. If I hit you, maybe I get a day off. I don't know what the rule is, but I saw it happen a lot.
Really?
Oh! Okay, what last one. I'm standing outside the hotel, and we're all just, whatever, everybody's standing out there, and there's cabs everywhere, and we just hear, wop, 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 and we look, and there's a cab driving past with a flat tire, with a fare in it. Doesn't slow down. Just keeps going to wherever the destination.
The great thing, people are still in the backseat, probably just on their phone, not even paying
attention.
They
don't care. Just, no one said anything.
Okay, so Russia's got this weird hybrid where they have lanes and people obey them. They drive quasi-normally, if not aggressively. But the great thing is they'll just start inventing other lanes. Like, sidewalks become lanes there. And my new favorite YouTube channel is there is a quote-unquote stop-a-douchebag movement in Russia, where it's like 20 to 30 year old guys that just go out and stop people being douchebags by that are driving on the sidewalks because they run over people and kill them. So the great thing is you'll get like 15 Russian guys, half of them like ex-boxers, on the sidewalk pulling guys out of their fucking G-wagons and going, you're going to stop doing this now, right? And then what they do is if they don't, if the guys, and you get guys that like pull guns on them and everything, it's they've got like probably 50 of these videos. They're great. What they'll do then is they take a 4-foot sticker and cover their windshields in stickers, like bumper stickers.
And just blind them, basically.
Blind them completely and then go, get back in traffic.
Oh, my God.
The number of fights on this channel is astounding and hilarious. They could stop a douchebag. If you look up if you look up Stop a Douchebag Russian on YouTube, you'll find it.
All right.
It's fantastic.
That's I've seen the Russian hammer fight. It was like,
oh yeah, I remember
that was
kind of
scary.
Yeah,
like a workers union, like they're fighting with hammers. Those are really hard. Man, I think driving in foreign countries is one of the funnest things.
It is fun. I mean, it's own adventure. It's fun. Like if you know where you're going, it can be really fucking awful if you end up on some highway that goes somewhere and you can't, you know, fucking.
I had a nav system. I told them I had to rent one and it was fine. It's really funny when you set the nav voice, I put it back in English, but it was like Susan. But Susan reading Mexican street signs is hilarious because it just takes, consonants and it takes pieces of sentences, that's what the computer does, pieces of sentences and words and puts them together in like the most crazy order ever. But at one point, my nav literally says, turn off road. off-roading. It was saying go off-road.
Really?
Not like turn off the street.
Did you stop and zoom out and see that, yes, the off-road trail would get you there?
No, if I had turned where it wanted me to, I would have driven onto the tarmac of the airport. I'm not even kidding. I was next to the big iron fence.
That's legal under Mexican driving.
It was like turn off-road. I'm like, that's a runway.
Your nav would have worked there on your phone.
I remember doing that in Panama. It was like
you had to cache the maps.
You had to cache the map on Wi-Fi, and then
the dot. You didn't have your data. Okay.
No, I wanted turn by turn because I didn't know where I was.
Yeah, that's super helpful.
Gotta get that T-Mobile, man. Fucking everywhere in the world.
I tried to get that fucking Navit Enterprise in Dubai, and they're like, "Oh no, we have map. Here you go."
Really? Yeah. They didn't have paper maps here.
Imagine a paper map in Dubai. Oof, fucking nightmare.
And how would you fucking read it if half of it's in Arabic?
You're like, that's the right shape. Squiggly, squiggly, eyeball. No, this is squiggly, squiggly, X. I don't know how to read an Arabic alphabet.
Oh, God. It was fucking ridiculous. We got anything on Facebook before we get out of here?
Yeah, I've got
Halloween.
A couple questions. What are your plans for the Focus once you get it? Are you going to leave it stock or send it to Cobb?
I don't know.
Mountain has already said they'll do it up.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'll leave it stock for a while and then see if I feel like it's a leased car. Like, I don't really care.
Didn't stop us last time.
It didn't stop us last time, no.
But it might be awesome stock. You know, you don't need
it. It might be,
everything.
I mean, I don't know. I sort of like the idea of it being kind of quiet, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The problem is, you know, I don't know. Well, they would take it returned with modifications on it, but I don't know. I'm not even going to see that car for 3 months, so I haven't thought about it, really.
All right.
Although Cobb seems pretty optimistic about what they're going to be doing with that.
They'll make it beastie.
Yeah.
Someone asked, ETA on All Cars Go to Heaven 2. It's going to be December-ish.
Christmas.
And then you sent me these questions.
When's Apex happening?
November
Next week,
18th
two
is
weeks.
The premiere in L.A., and they'll probably do a New York premiere also, but I'm not sure. If you just search Apex Movie, there's a website. So if you're in LA, you can come watch it and buy tickets. What's the very first exotic fast car you sat in or drove? And how did it make you feel and the impressions after the experience? From Davian Shaw.
I sat in a Countach when I was 8. That pretty much did it.
And then you started puberty immediately after.
There was a dealership in Atlanta called Formula One Imports that was near sort of where I lived, and I used to make my mom take me there like every week. And the guy was super cool because I was like 8 and knew about cars, and he would let me sit in all this shit. That was awesome.
That's pretty rad.
There's pictures of me dressed as a ridiculous looking 8-year-old. I had a thing for spandex bicycle shorts, actually.
What?
I swear to God, when I was 8. Yeah, there's pictures of this. Yeah. I really liked how they felt. Which is, I mean, now I wear boxer briefs that are made of basically the same shit. I just liked wearing them. And I'd wear, like, mesh shorts with those underneath them. That was a style for a while when I was of that age.
So you were CrossFit before CrossFit?
Indeed. Indeed I was. It wasn't pretty. There are pictures of it, though, but it was not pretty.
Dude, I wore size 42 cross-color shorts when I was 8.
Yeah.
Because I liked hip-hop.
Yeah. There were people that wore JNCOs. I mean,
I couldn't quite get
with
to
a straight face.
I grew up older enough. Those came about, I think, when I was old enough that I was like, I don't know. I have no reason, actually, to be like, that those were beneath me. It was just, I missed that boat, and I'm happy I did.
I had JNCOs, but not the super big ones. I had the ones that were baggy, but no more than, like, Levi's baggy.
Yeah, no, they were regular baggy ones, and then there was the ones that were, like, that had, like, 60-inch, where it came with three measurements. It was, like, 36, 32, 60.
Yeah, it was, like, the bottom cuff. Yeah. Like, you could fit it over rollerblades. Yeah. Like, you could put the pants on with the rollerblades on your floor.
Yeah,
those were crazy.
I remember at one point, my buddy Tony had a pair that the legs were so big, and we were all hanging out at his house one day, and these two girls are over there, and they're like, these are fucking ridiculous. And they both, each of them got in one leg. And there's a fucking classic picture of it somewhere.
Well, my friend Brandon had those, and when you'd walk around, the legs were so big that the pant legs wouldn't move when you walk. And so it looked like he was just gliding across the floor.
Okay, Jedi with a robe. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You know what, though? Probably the same concept of, you know, women and why they wear skirts. A lot of airflow.
Maybe,
pure comfort. That's air conditioning.
No, 60-inch bottoms is not pure comfort.
What if maybe that's the new
dish dash? That's a style taken to an extreme.
60-inch bottoms, also the name of a bar in San Francisco.
Black Boil. If Alex Roy's listening, he'll laugh at that. Andrew Gill asked, what do you guys want for the future of TST? Are you satisfied with it? Because he said he thinks it would be cool if TST became its own aftermarket tuning company. Obviously, more staff and capital will be needed. I don't know about that, but with Ferris signing off, all the cars,
we never agree on what
we
wanted to work on.
Yeah, that I put that suggestion in there. I just want to know how he got from that. Like, there's no fabrication. There's no tuning involved in any of this shit. Make videos, dude. I don't. It's never been like.
You and I are really the only two that can turn a wrench.
We've never.
I can't tune a car, turn a wrench.
Yeah, we've never like looked at that far into the future. Maybe that's to our detriment. I don't know. Maybe we could have been fucking Vice by now or something.
There's been
too
much focus on making the day-to-day money.
It takes so much energy to go, how am I going to make money this month, that we don't have a lot of time to think about how are we going to make money next year. And because gigs tend to come to us a couple months out, the schedule gets filled, and then you go to work, and that's kind of it. Like, I don't really know. I mean, tuning company. I mean, certainly not.
No.
Not a fucking snowball's chance in hell.
No.
Television show, maybe. I you know, or something. There's.
You know, it could be an interesting avenue. It's one step removed from the tuning. Is actually going and working with tuning companies and actually going, this is good, this is not, you should tweak this before you release this.
Consulting. Yes. Oh, consulting would be so great.
Yeah.
You go there for a day and you charge them $100,000.
I do consulting, but not on this stuff.
Everyone always says sometimes. You should do consulting, and I don't know how to do that.
You tell them what
make
sucks and what doesn't.
Right, but like, I don't know how to go, listen, I know what's good and what's not, and you need to pay me this. And, like, I don't know how to just physically, just out of nowhere, go and do that.
It's easy. You just say it right here. If you've got a tuning company and you want shit tested, pay you and you go to it.
You'd have to agent yourself and go approach them for that stuff.
I mean, I guess, but...
I think we could do event stuff. Like, if we did Time Attack events or that kind of thing, I could see us doing that, but...
I don't know. I don't know.
TV show.
Events seem annoying. It's really just like, just stick around long enough that someone goes, we're going to give you $300,000 an episode to make whatever, not necessarily whatever you want, but like, you're going to have a show worth spending $300,000 an episode on, and we're going to make that.
Adam's had some good luck doing live podcasts. There's, you know, it's not a ton of money, but there's money to be made.
I can't imagine that with an audience of our size, we could get a meaningfully decent audience on a live podcast. And I would be personally embarrassed if we booked a fucking venue that held 150 or 200 people and six showed up.
Yeah, we need, if 150 of you live in LA, post on our Facebook. Seriously, and then and then we would do it. You know,
no, I can tell you right now the numbers are much more than that for listeners in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, I don't know if you would go to a live podcast, tell us.
Yeah,
just say that.
If you would pay to go to a live podcast,
yeah. Like, we were not going to rent the venue.
I went to a live podcast with fucking Bill Burr. I paid $25 and I was entertained and it was fine. Yeah. It's good.
Well, it's like a stand-up show at that
right.
point. Right. You know?
Kind of. Yeah. But it would for us to justify leaving this room to do it though, you'd have to make a couple hundred bucks at least each, mm-hmm. right? To do it somewhere else.
We have people that have paid admission, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you'd pay to see that show.
I was back and forth with a guy, you know, yesterday that Paul and Todd, you know, threw something up online where they're like, look at this. All the top shows in automotive on iTunes are, you know, friends of ours on Shout Engine. And this guy goes, holy shit, you must be making a ton of money. And I go, dude, you have no idea. We're not really making any money on this. We're basically just kind of breaking even at this point. It's not a lot of money, and we're trying to answer that question of where we're going to make the fucking money on it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I mean, you know, you can't, without a giant capital investment, you know, the smoking tire is not all of a sudden going to turn into some huge thing. But what it can do is continue to grow organically, and we all use it to get other gigs. I mean, I certainly use the smoking tire as a thing to get TV gigs, and you know, other people have used it for other things, and like, that's fine. People have written for us for free and gone on to, I mean, currently Road and Track has three staff writers right now that have written for us for free in the past,
mm-hmm.
you know, plus people like Blake Wrong and whatever.
I use it to launder money.
Yeah, that's too, me
not
too.
A lot, like $100.
I use it to evade taxes.
Yeah.
but
allegedly.
No, I mean, the problem is that we are always on the road so much that without literally giving someone else the keys to the kingdom full time, we can't even, like, take on an employee. Like, if someone wanted to volunteer, say, hey, I'm going to do your whatever the fuck, you know, every day from 9 to 5, whether it's something as simple as calendars or...
Just
or,
a secretarial type role.
Yeah, I would literally have to give them keys to every, like, to my house, to the office. Like, they'd have to be able to get into my fucking whole life, and the kind of person, a kind of like assistant or employer, that's the kind of person you have to pay them a real salary. You'd have to get a real person who's not a fan, you know what I mean, and get like it would be a legitimate, like, professional career kind of thing. And it doesn't generate the kind of money to do that.
And that's not a free
and
person.
Round and round we go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what do we do? Well, we shot 44 one takes in the last fucking 2 weeks. That's what we do. You know what I mean? So it doesn't solve the what happens in 5 years, but it happens. It solves the what happens in the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Huh. It would be nice if there was some grand vision. Play with cars, make money.
We all have other things we do to make the ends meet.
Yeah. So anyway. And on that bombshell. Speaking of that bombshell is a new book written by Richard Porter, who is a Top Gear's head, like, script editor for Top Gear. He's an acquaintance of mine, a very good dude. The book is available on Amazon. He said he's going to send me one to review on the show.
Really?
Yeah. It hasn't arrived yet, but we are going to get a copy.
Harris was pimping it the other day.
Yeah, well, because Richard's hilarious. His website is called sniffpetrol.com. It's satirical.
Isn't that the name of the book, too?
No, the book is called On That Bombshell. It's sort of a behind the scenes of the making of Top Gear.
It's available on Amazon right now and Kindle for $12.
There you go.
And so maybe, let's see, paperback, I don't know, $16 or something.
Yeah, cool. Affordable.
Yeah.
So check that out. Was there anything else on Facebook before we?
Do you think? Oh, well, actually, apropos, do you think the new Amazon Top Gear will still have the same impact as it did on the BBC?
Impact.
I think it'll be pretty much the same.
I think it's already had its cultural impact. I mean, if they continue to make shows and they're good,
I think. Because the end of his question is amidst the recent high quality YouTube shows like TST, I think they will.
Oh, they'll fucking blow us out of the water.
Internet video.
They've got Amazon money backing them up.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to make a show very similar to what they had.
Yeah,
with maybe without the airport track, but it's going to be awesome.
Well, they'll find other tracks. I mean, they tweeted some picture of the fucking crew. It was like 60 guys.
Yeah,
I know that. They've been shooting extensively here in the U.S.
Yeah,
and Amazon was the most profitable company last year. I
think they are now the biggest retailer in the world.
Right. So yeah, that show is going to rock.
Yeah, but I don't think it will be a game changer in the way that. What was a game changer was Final Gear making Top Gear available via torrents around the world.
That's true.
Yeah,
without piracy, convenient. Top Gear would have not become what it was.
Very true.
Yeah. It's the most watched television program in the world.
And there would probably be piracy of the Amazon one as well.
Yeah. Although, funny enough, Top Really Tyler, that's not where they make all their money on the hosting business for my company.
Oh, really?
Yep. Amazon, that's their biggest business by far now. Because they run a third of the fucking internet.
Jeez. Yeah. That's awesome.
All right, guys. The Smoking Tire Podcast is, of course, powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. You just need a microphone, a computer, and an internet connection. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and, of course, on Shout Engine. Leave a comment on iTunes if that's how you listen to the show. Our t-shirt club has new t-shirt designs every month. You can buy the old designs for a retail price or sign up for anywhere from 1 to 12 months going forward. That's at thesmokingtire.com. And that's all I can think of. So Chris is off to SEMA.
I will be there. I got 15 shows I'm doing over 3 days.
I can't even tell you how happy I am to not be doing that. That sounds fucking great, sitting at my house and not doing that.
But once again, we'll be in the MagnaFlow booth, so if we're not...
What hall is that in, you know?
I don't know. It's going to be MagnaFlow.
MagnaFlow is a giant booth.
They have one of
the
biggest ones.
Yeah, it'll be easy to find, I'm sure.
So look it up, and if we're not in the middle of recording, come by and say hi.
And what else is happening? Apex, the movie?
Apex movie's coming out. Episodes of Engineered are going out every Monday.
And I guess there was just a big dump of old tunes that forgot to be made public, right?
There's two, but yeah.
The Saab one and Busy Moto?
Yeah.
I got about... Well, a lot of people. The Busy Moto got 500,000 views in 4 days, which is good. The Saab video, I got in the span of 1 day emails from about 8 to 10 different Saab owners expressing utter outrage that we filmed that Saab and not their better Saabs.
Well, you knew about all those guys, though.
That's the interesting part.
That's what's rude about
it. Those are some ornery architects.
All of them
Christ.
Had offered me their Saabs before, and I said, no, 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 I'm driving this Saab.
Yeah.
That's exactly the opposite of how it went. One person in 10 years offered me a Saab, and I went and drove that Saab. Mm-hmm. So if you have a problem with that Saab, but you didn't offer to bring your Saab to L.A. for me to drive your Saab before I film that one, go fuck yourself. Seriously.
It's totally true.
Yeah. How dare I not know about your Saab in fucking New England? I'm sorry. I did just drive another. I drove another Saab on a one take, a 9000 Aero. When was the last time you saw? Think about it. Have you seen a 9000 Aero in Los Angeles in that last 5 years?
I can't remember the last time I saw a Saab in LA. Really rare.
I see the convertibles, like late 90s, early 2000s convertibles.
I remember when I saw one of those last SUVs they built, like
the 97X.
Yeah, and I was
like that car.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. I've never seen one before, and that was 6 years old by the time I first saw it.
Yeah. Growing up in the Northeast, you see Saabs a lot.
Oh, everywhere.
And there was a few 9000 Aeros in my high school. There were hand-me-downs from their parents, like early, 94, 95. I went to high school in 97, 98, 99. So the kids were driving their parents like hand-me-down ones. But I hadn't seen one in Los Angeles until this guy showed up and was like, I finally saw it and I was like, man, I haven't seen one of those in years. And I
bet
drove
you
it.
Go to the east side of Los Angeles and you see some really sorry Saabs.
Maybe. I haven't seen a 9000. This is the only 9000 Aero I can recall seeing in my entire time living in L.A. But I drove it for a one take, so that's coming soon. Okay, cool. We're out of here. Chris is going to be at SEMA. If you're at SEMA, go say hi. I'll be not at SEMA. We're doing something. Aren't we doing something? What are we doing next week instead of SEMA?
I think we have a shoot, maybe. We
might have a shoot.
Not hating life.
Oh, I think, don't we have that BMW 2002 shoot or something? I don't care.
I don't know.
We don't need to talk about this on the air. I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Yeah.